The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Oh, the world discovered this tune on this very day in 66. Love 1966. Welcome back, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. I'm Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. We'll get some sports business with Lorne Rubin in the next 30 minutes as well. A lot to talk about, as is usually the case, every Monday a little after 6 with our next very special guest.
Michael Farber on Melnick in the Afternoon, brought to you by Morella's Restaurant. With an open kitchen concept, charcoal fire pit, and a wood-burning pizza oven from Napoli. Route 132 next to Poker Palace.
Hope everybody got to see Michael's piece with Ross Rebliati on TSN. How you doing?
I'm great. 19th nervous breakdown. We talking about P.K. Subban?
I have hesitated in talking about it very much. We mentioned it with Pierre. I touched on it briefly in the first couple hours. I knew you were going to talk about it some more, so let's go.
Okay. Back when the Rolling Stones were young, hockey games were played at the Forum at the corner of Atwater and St. Catherine. P.K. Subban's relationship is at the corner of passive and aggressive.
Okay, Michael's got his psychology hat on here.
And we saw passive last Friday when P.K. goes to the Children's Hospital with his teammates, the Predators teammates.
And, six of them, yep.
Yeah, and says, gee, isn't this great? In essence, saying that he wasn't getting that kind of support from his teammates in Montreal. And that was passive, and it was aggressive on Saturday night when Brendan Gallagher took a run at him and all the shenanigans that went on. And what Gallagher said isn't wrong. PK always makes it about PK. He has since he's a little kid. And I know his parents reasonably well, and they've shared stories about how PK had to be front and center in all the family home movies and in the photos. I mean, that's who he is. We know that. So there was not a revelation there. I mean, that's who PK is. And it seems to me he hasn't really moved off that. In fact, he's developed it and become, I mean, what's the 21st century word? Brand?
Ugh.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
But yeah, yeah. And I'm one, and so are you.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's what we're told, right? That's what we're told. It's like right up there with the major demo that, you know, we first started hearing about 25 years ago or so.
But PK, and we visited in Tampa a couple weeks ago at the All-Star Game, introduced me to his woman who handles his business affair, and his sister Natasha does some as well.
You kind of misled us there for a second.
Well, that's he has a businesswoman.
Yeah.
Other than Sean Avery, I can't think of any hockey player who had outside representation for his business. Avery had one, and PK. And, I mean, they're the exception. If you look at the NBA, pretty much everybody's got one. In hockey, these guys are the exception. So what we're seeing is a clash of culture there, a misunderstanding of each other, or an unwillingness to adapt to each other. And I think that's how we best view the P.K. Subban story. That's the prism through which we have to view it.
As it's dumped into the Nashville zone, Subban behind the net. Oh, Gallagher went after him, lock, stock, and barrel, and he flipped over. I think it shook him up a little bit, too. Shot on net, stopped and held by Rene as Subban mouths off again to Gallagher.
Yeah, it's just, you know, battling hard, I think. He was talking, doing what he does, but I don't know. Like I said, I don't know why we're talking about him. That's kind of what he wants. He came in here, tried to make it about PK Subban, which is, you know, what he does. You know, we're going to focus on our team and lost the game, try and regroup and go from there.
I don't think he said anything to me after the goal, no. But some guys from the bench were saying stuff, but I couldn't hear it. It's so loud in this building, you know the way it is. But I'm sure it's pretty quiet over there right now with 2 points on our side.
Oh, this is beautiful.
All right, so let me get back. I think you you kind of tied it up there perfectly. There isn't a whole lot to add there, but it is kind of sad that we had somebody in this city. I know he rubs people the wrong way. Both of us covered the Gary Carter era. It was very similar in that respect in terms of how some teammates viewed Gary and his approach to baseball. But if you could tell Mark Bergevin to tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, if you can go back to June 28th of, what year was it? Jeez, it seems like such a long time ago already. Huh? It's like 2016. June 28th, 2016. If would he do it again?
I'll take you back to June 18th, 2016. I'm having breakfast with somebody, and his phone rings, and he shows me. It's Bergevin calling. This person's involved with hockey. And he was asking questions that I could hear this person's end of the conversation about, what do I do with P.K. Subban? And this was a person not involved in the Canadiens organization. Bergevin didn't know. Didn't know what he was going to do. Now, I look back at this as a contract thing on both sides. Shea Weber, of course, the Flyers, and their offer sheet and what Nashville had to do. And there was Subban, who was signed to a contract, I presume reluctantly, by Mark Bergevin. So both teams were dealing with contracts they weren't happy with. And, of course, there was the no-trade clause kicking in on July 1. And what this person told Bergevin, he said, if he's here after July 1, it won't be your team, it won't be Jeff Molson's team, it won't be Michelle Therrien's team, it'll be P.K. Subban's team. And if you can live with that, fine. If not, I would trade him. Okay? Now I'll take you fast forward to June 24th or 5th. I get a phone call from somebody saying, you know, is P.K. Subban a decent guy? And I said, listen, I go to bed at 10 o'clock. I don't know what he's doing after 10 o'clock. But I know what kind of player he is, and yeah, he's a good player. Why don't you call Hal Gill, who was his guy who kind of looked after him a little bit and tried to coach him up in the ways of being an NHL player. And teams were interested in P.K. Subban. So we know 3 or 4 days before that date that his name was indeed out there. So that's what I can tell you.
But you don't want to even take the next step. Would Mark Bergevin make the same move all over again?
I don't know. I think this. Montreal was going for it last season. Now, let's forget, you know, the Andreas Martinson era of Montreal Canadiens hockey. But there was a legit chance last year.
And, you know, appeared to be, yeah.
Yeah, there was a pretty good team. They were going into a pretty even series against New York. And I always believe if Pacioretty had scored on the breakaway in Game 5, Montreal wins it. That was kind of late in the third period. End up losing that game in overtime, losing the series in 6. If they win that Game 5, I suspect they win that series. Then there's another toss-up series with Ottawa. And then, and we saw Ottawa and Pittsburgh, another toss-up series then. And this, it is not inconceivable that that team could have gotten to a Stanley Cup final. Won it? No, I don't think so. But maybe. Maybe. And so, and that was Shea Weber. And that was going to be on the back of Shea Weber and on the back of Carey Price and on Pacioretty and what have you. Now, that has passed them by, and the team has taken a giant step backwards. So today, no. But last year, yeah. I mean, that there was a certain inherent logic to it. It was going to be a short-term move, and now it looks like a long-term problem.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. I have never had an issue. If you're a National Hockey League general manager, experienced or not, you're in charge of building a team and the player personnel. You want to make a trade, you make the trade. But when you make a trade involving that kind of player and that kind of talent, it better work. And in the short term, it hasn't worked. In the short term. In the immediate aftermath, it might have worked, outlining what Michael just said. But it hasn't.
No, and I don't see it getting better, and that's unfortunate. And Shea Weber's been a very good player, and it was very interesting to see the leak of the analytics stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, how funny was that? You know, when a team is still worried about that trade, Montreal, and it looked like some numerical butt covering to me.
Michael Farber with us every Monday with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Either of you want to throw something at Michael before we change topics?
Just that, look, I mean, it was clear before Saturday, it's even more clear now, that Brandon Gallagher and PK Subban are extraordinarily different individuals. They're different human beings, but they're both very talented hockey players, and there's no reason why one person can't coexist with another, even though they don't go out at night after Michael's bedtime of 10 p.m.
You know, you used the analogy of Gary Carter earlier, Mitch.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, there, no question. That's another one.
And I covered the Yankees in 77 and 78 for the Bergen Record. And Reggie almost had no allies. And I think that's fairly consistent with Subban, who was close with Carey Price. And there weren't a whole lot of big PK guys, from my understanding. And Reggie was off on an island. It didn't mean he didn't hit three home runs in the concluding game of the 1977 World Series.
That's when he became Mr. October.
He did. And so I want to go back to Reggie Jackson, who was the straw that stirred the drink, and it rubbed people the wrong way, including maybe especially his manager, Billy Martin.
And his captain, Thurman Munson.
Yes, indeed.
Who despised him. But
yes.
What do all these guys have in common? PK's almost, you know, he almost won the cup, but Gary Carter won a world championship, and he was a gamer. And no matter what people thought of him personally, once the game started, you wanted him with you. Reggie Jackson, same thing. Once the game started, you wanted him with you. PK Subban, you want him with you when the game starts. It's all that other stuff, unfortunately, is part of the package.
True.
All right. What do you make of these Olympics so far? What kind of start is this? Is it sputtering? Is it what?
Well, it's an outpost where I'm having trouble believing their games there. What happened with women's slopestyle was a disgrace when essentially four out of five athletes are crashing. That's gross negligence on the part of the IOC and the Federation that allowed that to happen. So that troubled me. But I'm a sucker for these things. Listen, the last Winter Olympics I watched on TV was 1976, Innsbruck. I was at the last 10. So it's kind of fun to see them filtered through. When I get up in the morning and I flip on the tube.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of the recent Olympic experience for Canada, at least since 98, and I covered five Olympics without NHL players and five with, was involved with the hockey. And when you look at Mikhail Kingsbury, and you know, the best in the world, and you look at Sven Kramer, the Dutch speed skater, the best of the world, and they're going to be great stories coming out of the men's hockey tournament, but it's not best on best. And other than Rasmus Dahlin, it's tough to get excited about a single player in that tournament. Well, James Wisniewski might come back to the NHL. Yeah, okay. You know, Brian Gionta. We love Brian Gionta. But if this is, you know, the best we can do, or all the hard luck, underdog, second chance stories, you know, I'd rather see, you know, Ovechkin playing against Crosby, playing against Kopitar, playing against Tuukka Rask, fill in the blank.
All right, final one.
It wasn't easy to be, in effect, representing the owners when the owners had done what they did. I mean, it was one of the reasons why in 1994 it was pretty clear the owners were not going to break that union. How can you break a union that just got a $280 million collection paid by the owners for a misdeed?
That misdeed was gently put by Faye Vincent, the former commissioner. It was called collusion. That was Faye Vincent with Eric McCormella on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock right here on TSN 690. As a hot topic in the offseason of Major League Baseball has been the lack of movement among top free agents. Some people, especially the Players Association, are at least muttering the word collusion, Michael.
I think the difference is back in 94, there was no luxury tax. And now teams are being a little more prudent. I mean, we saw Darvish sign.
Yep.
Arrieta looks like he's headed to the Phillies. You know, we still haven't seen J.D. Martinez sign. Eric Hosmer's not signed. maybe some agents misjudged the market, but you have to prove collusion. And I haven't necessarily seen anything that would suggest that had been done. So maybe we will see more of it. But right now, you know, I think teams are just trying to be smart.
Michael's phone theme is very much like the CBC Olympic theme. Do you notice that? We'll let you grab that. Thanks as always, Michael. Great stuff on PK and Gallagher. Okay, appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Three things. One, I think the interesting thing for most fans is many of us remember collusion that took place in the late 80s and early 90s before I got to baseball, but an awful lot of people have no idea how important collusion was. It happened back then. It was a travesty. It was a real blight on the ownership in baseball, and this is an example of how long people's memories are. The Baseball Players Association remembers that the owners stole an awful lot of money, $280 million to be fair, from the players. It got caught. And so the second point is that you would be surprised if when there's a dearth of signings that some of the people with long memories who were have every reason to raise it, raise it. But the third point is without evidence, without some basis for saying there's collusion, it's pretty hard to prove.
Once again, Faye Vincent with Eric Macromello right here every Sunday morning. Eric's got his own show in addition to being a regular contributor to the morning show here on TSN 690 with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt. I've said this many, many times with so much focus around here when we go and rehash the what-ifs of Expos history, Blue Monday, the Osh Schmidt of 1980, inability to beat the Pirates in 79, no wild card back then, the strike of 94 and all that. The collusion of 1987, the season that followed, the immediate season of 1987, look at the standings. Look at the year that Tim Raines had. The Expos could not use Tim Raines until May 1st. That was a full month of games without a guy who had a career year, and what difference that might have made.
A smile from him tonight. To be honest with you, I just saw the blood dripping down his face after he tried to hit me and fell down. So that's what I saw. I didn't see anything else. Other than that, it was just a normal game as usual, just competing in the battles, and that's it. Just trying to outwork the other guy on the other side.
Hit Brendan just when you went before you went off.
I think I actually hit Leckie's. I hit Leckie's stick and somehow fell on my face. It's kind of hard to do. I don't know how I did it, but I just kind of fell on my face. A couple stitches, it's fine.
Is that when you had that cut on your dryer?
Yeah, that was that one. I just kind of hit my face on the ice.
Your Nissan dealer presents Rogue Mania. Rogue.